Greetings, friends, and welcome to another broadcast of the Victory Hour. This radio broadcast is brought to you by the Lord's people at Clavel Assembly in Foster, Rhode Island. Go to our website, clavelassembly.com. clavelassembly.com. You can see all you need to know about us. It'll give you a good overview of who we are and where we stand. And if you want to contact me directly, email me, info@clavelassembly.com. info@clavelassembly.com. And you can post your comments or questions to me. I'd be happy to respond to you. This is Jim Gallagher speaking. I want to do a couple things on today's broadcast. First of all, I want to talk when we come back from the break, I want to talk about what we started talking about last week, and that is the capacity of the Christian to honestly and open-mindedly examine a doctrine of Scripture that presents itself in opposition to a formally held belief. In other words, you hold to a certain idea as being true from God's Word. Then you're challenged on your perception of what the Scriptures are actually saying in that on that particular issue. Now, we usually become defensive, and we shut down, we close our minds, and we close our ears, and we just get in defensive mode. That's not being a Berean. I want to challenge you to be a Berean, and I'm going to do so in a very limited way, not the same way I've handled it at Clavel, because I think it's too much for most. But I'm going to challenge you to be able to actually investigate like a Berean by examining the question of the condition of a believer's soul after he dies. You say, oh, is there any question there? Well, that's the idea. I'm going to raise a question and see if you can even handle asking the question to yourself and see if you can handle the idea of contemplating that perhaps you could be mistaken and you want to give the other side a fair hearing. Because I think very few Christians actually get around to doing this when it comes to issues that they've held for a long time and with a strong belief. So we're going to talk about that when we get back from the break. But this part of the hour, this first half hour, I am furious. The politicians in Rhode Island are criminals and crooks. They're vile lawbreakers. You say, Pastor, you should... No, pray for your leaders. Don't say stuff like... No, they're vile lawbreakers. They should disgust the average person, Christian or no. Anybody with a conscience still operating, with any concept of morals, ought to be utterly ashamed of the politicians in Rhode Island, and mainly I'm talking about the Democrats. The Democrats want illegal aliens to vote. That makes them criminals. I want to show you why I'm saying that and give you a little biblical context as well. But before I get to the local criminals, let's go to the federal criminals, and I want to examine some of these email leaks with Hillary Clinton and then make a comment about this latest situation with Trump and put a little perspective to the whole thing. But I want to first read from Matthew 23, because I believe Matthew 23 applies to so many of our politicians in Washington, D.C., and I believe it applies also to so many of our politicians here in criminal Rhode Island, okay? Matthew 23, and look, I grew up in Rhode Island my whole life. I mean, I was born in Rhode Island, raised in Rhode Island. Clavel Assembly is in Foster, Rhode Island. I want to see what's best for our state. You know what's best for our state? Throw the bums out. That's what's best for our state. Not just throw them out, prosecute them to the full extent of the law, because they're lawbreakers. Is it not a crime to rebel against the highest authority of the land? which in our case is the Constitution of the United States. Of course, we have a Rhode Island Charter, too, that has to be respected. But when our politicians don't respect those laws and they break them, that makes them lawbreakers. They're criminals. They're like the Pharisees of old. That's what why I'm reading from Matthew 23. Let me read from Matthew 23. I'm going to read three verses. I mean, there's so much we could read here to make application, but I'll just read these three, verses 13 through 15. Verse 13, Jesus said, "But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. For ye neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are entering to go in." All right. First of all, I know that our politicians aren't religious leaders. That's evident to all of us. And so you say, well, then there's no application. But there is in principle. You see, here, the scribes and the Pharisees were religious leaders, moral leaders, but they were hypocrites. Now, just because a person is a religious or moral leader and he has failures and sins doesn't make him a hypocrite, because there is none righteous, no, not one. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. If you're going to be a religious or moral leader, and the requirement of the dopey public is to say, well, then he has to be without sin, that's the stupidest thing. Are you going to be kidding? There'd be no religious leaders. The concept, however, and I think, religious leaders need to strive for holiness. I'm all in favor of them striving with all of their mind and heart and strength and with the power of God's grace, striving for holiness. But you're not going to find perfection. And again, if that's what you think is the criteria, there would be no religion. There'd be no religious leaders. There'd be no ministers. There'd be no elders. There'd be nothing. But the idea is that a true hypocrite that doesn't belong in the office of a minister is the idea that he promotes these moral principles, but he doesn't really believe in them and practice them as a way of life. He's two-faced. Do what I say, not as I do. Not that he has a moment where he stumbled or fell and he acted out rashly and he showed himself human. No, that's going to happen. And of course, again, moral and religious leaders need to keep a lid on that and really fight that fight with God's help and grace, and no question. But there's a difference between falling and stumbling as a human, even as a leader, and the whole thing being a lie, and you never do what you say, and neither do you put much effort into doing it. You're just a big phony. And this is what the Lord Jesus was dealing with. I think that's what we're dealing with our political leaders. They promote themselves as leaders of the nation. And the establishment, particularly in the light of how they're going at Donald Trump, the idea is, well, we establishment politicians, we have some moral fiber. We set a standard. We've got expectations. Donald Trump doesn't meet them. He isn't fit, and he shouldn't even run for president. And they're taking a moral high ground, like the Pharisees and scribes did in Jesus' day. But as they talk a moral high ground, they sin with impunity against the very things they exhort everybody else to do, which makes them just like the Pharisees of old. Swindlers and losers. Verse 14, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayer. Therefore, ye shall receive the greater damnation." Now, again, you can see the hypocrisy. So they devour widows' houses. Imagine stealing the homes of poor widows, and yet they go into the synagogue and with long, elaborate prayers make a show before men. Big phonies. So it is with our illustrious leaders. They claim and they swear an oath to the Constitution of the United States. They hate the Constitution. You say, Pastor, you're exaggerating. No, I'm not exaggerating. They hate the Constitution. I'm not saying it's true of all, but I'm saying it's true of most. They could care less what it says, but they have to give the image as though they do care. When's the last time the politicians strived to correct the abuses of the federal government and abide by the 10th Amendment? You don't see the Republicans fighting for that. You don't see the Democrats fighting for that. Losers, deceivers, lawbreakers. And believe me, that's just the tip of the iceberg. So, let me get to verse 15. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte. And when he is made, ye make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves. I can only imagine some man running for office with every good intention, looking to make the nation or the state a better place, to strive to serve the people, and then and the politicians bring him under their wing, but then they teach them their ways. They teach him how to look the other way when he's supposed to look the other way, how not to ask questions when he's supposed to not ask questions, how to play ball with the big dogs that run the show, and if they don't, then, see, they make these new, if there are, and I believe there are some, these newly entered freshman politicians with idealistic goals, they bring them into the fold and make them twofold more the child of hell than they are. Now, I'm saying this in part, I'll illustrate it through some of these statements that have been released by WikiLeaks about Hillary Clinton in her emails. Hillary Clinton made this statement, and she was speaking, I think she was speaking at this point to some bankers. I could be wrong, but she's giving a speech, and these are paid speeches where she got money for it. I believe these were bankers. They're certainly globalists. But this is what Hillary Clinton said in 2013. Yeah, it was a group of bankers. And she said in 2013, quote, "My dream is a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders. Sometime in the future, with energy that is as green and sustainable as we can get it, powering growth and opportunity for every person in the hemisphere." All right. So here's Hillary Clinton saying her dream is a hemispheric common market. She is not looking out for the American worker. She is not looking out for the best interests of the United States. She's a globalist. And so she'll work for, you know, it's divide and conquer. So they want to regionalize the nation states and get rid of the nations themselves. So she's fighting for a hemisphere. She wants to be the queen of the Americas and the American hemisphere. Canada, North America, South America. See, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to think regionally because we're going global. Forget the Constitution. Forget the sovereignty of the United States of America. Her dream, she says, "My dream is a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders." Open borders. Let them just flow across the borders. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. 9/11 doesn't matter. Let them flow across the borders without resistance. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how many of these fanatical Muslim terrorists come over from Syria. She wants more of them to come. Doesn't matter. We don't care what happens to the average American. She's concerned with the overall image of the hemisphere. She's a Marxist and she's a globalist. She's an enemy to the United States of America. And she says she wants energy to be as green and sustainable as we can get it. Now, look, I'm not in favor of dirty energy, but usually when the liberals are talking about green energy and getting it as green as they can, this is just another means through which they can achieve the destruction of the power and the sovereignty of the United States of America, and the redistribution of wealth and the enriching of their friends. You know, Al Gore, he's Mr. Green because he made all these investments. He's looking to make a killing on a market that's based on false science. So Hillary, you know, this is Hillary Clinton. And then listen to this. You got to listen to this next one. Here she's speaking to Deutsche Bank in 2014. Listen to what she says to Deutsche Bank in 2014. This is Hillary Clinton. She said, "Now, it's important to recognize the vital role that the financial markets play in our economy and that so many of you are contributing to. To function effectively, those markets and the men and women who shape them have to command trust and confidence, because we all rely on the market's transparency and integrity. So even if it may not be 100% true, if the perception is that somehow the game is rigged, that should be a problem for all of us, and we have to be willing to make that absolutely clear." Now, that's just unbelievable to me. She's acknowledging that the banking system is rigged. She says, so even it may not be 100% true if the perception is that somehow the game is rigged, that should be a problem for all of us. In other words, she knows it's rigged. It's a matter of degree, but yeah, it's rigged. But we can't let the people think it's rigged, because that will cause them to lose confidence, and that's what produces shaky markets. So we've got to cover up our sins, because she's an expert at that, right? She spent her life covering up her own sins and the sins of her husband. Now, a perfect example of that is when she was complaining about Donald Trump, because Donald Trump said that the U.S. Federal Reserve had created a false economy in the United States by promoting artificially low interest rates. I mean, only a knucklehead would say that's not true. Someone that doesn't know anything about what's been happening with the Federal Reserve. Of course, what he said is true, and everybody knows it. But she got all mad that Donald Trump said that. And then she said, anyone running for president have no business criticizing the Federal Reserve. In fact, the president of the United States have no business criticizing the Federal Reserve. Do you realize how evil that statement is? Understand, folks, the Federal Reserve is a private international banking cartel. It is not an arm of the United States government. It's a private international banking cartel. And it doesn't matter that the president appoints the chairman of the Fed. That's window dressing to make you think the president has control. Think, because you know why? Yeah, he chooses who will be the chairman, yeah, from a list that the Federal Reserve supplies to him to choose from. And there's going to be no bad choices from their perspective, not ours, from their perspective. And Hillary Clinton is saying that the president shouldn't even comment on anything the Fed does, positive or negative. So this idea that somehow they're under our thumb, no, there's a little American control, we appoint, no, that's not true. We shouldn't even speak. When Janet Yellen speaks, we're all supposed to bow our heads and lie prostrate on the ground and humble ourselves in sackcloth and ashes and let the president just shut up, because we need to do the bidding of the international banking cartel that is making money off of printing money out of thin air. The only thing that backs our Federal Reserve notes is an IOU from the American people. That has made money no longer an asset. It's a liability. It's the most crooked system on the face of the earth. And the love of money is the root of all evil. And that brings us to Hillary Clinton. She's right there at the root of all evil, promoting all this stuff. In another speech, we're told she was given to Goldman Sachs and BlackRock investors, Hillary admitted that she was far removed from the struggles of the middle class. She said, quote, I'm kind of far removed because the life I've lived and the economic, you know, fortunes that my husband and I now enjoy, but I haven't forgotten it. So she knows, she acknowledges she's far removed from where the average American is. And now there's so many emails, I can't take the time to cover them all. She was talking about how there's one quote where she's talking about holding Wall Street accountable, you know, after the big financial collapse in 2008, holding Wall Street accountable. But she goes on and she's giving this speech to bankers. Actually, she's giving this speech for the National Multi-Housing Council. And she basically said that they are to hold Wall Street accountable, but only for political reasons. You got to look like you're chastising them for what they've done. So, you know, whip them with a wet noodle. That's Hillary Clinton. In another spot, she's basically saying Wall Street needs to fix itself because Washington doesn't have the expertise. So she wants the wolf to guard the hen house. That's Hillary Clinton. In fact, there's one quote, I don't have it in front of me, but I was reading it before, where she says, usually folks have associated the Republican Party with Wall Street, but really, I'm changing that, and I want Wall Street associated with the Democrat Party. And she's basically saying, hey, I've been working for the profit of Wall Street for a long time. But these are closed-door meetings with bankers and things like that that weren't supposed to be recorded, weren't supposed to be leaked out to the public. Which brings us to a statement she made to bankers. This is back in 2014, I believe. And she made the statement to Goldman BlackRock. I think that's who she's saying it to. But if everybody's watching, now here she is speaking to bankers, right? But if everybody's watching, you know, all of the backroom discussions and the deals, you know, then people get a little nervous, to say the least. So you need both a public and a private position. You just have to sort of figure out how to, getting back to that word balance, how to balance the public and the private efforts that are necessary to be successful politically, and that's not just a comment about today. So you need to have a public and a private position. In other words, be a liar like I am. You tell the people one thing, but you've got a different agenda. You can't let them know. But you've got to operate in a way that's acceptable to them while you're doing that which is nefarious. These are the kind of speeches she gave. This is Hillary. Well, there's too many of them. They say, well, what about Trump and all his vulgar comments about women? Okay, just let me say this quickly, because, you know, time's ticking by fast here. Let me say this quickly. I understand Trump made some vulgar and very worldly and wicked comments about women. And in that interview he was giving in, well, not wasn't an interview, whatever he was doing, 1995, the fellow, was it from Access Hollywood? Or maybe he was going on a soap opera, one of these things. It doesn't matter. And so he's talking, and the recording's been leaked. Funny how it's leaked in October just before the debate, right? You know, this is the media. And what he said was wrong, vile, disgusting, that anyone running for president would be talking and thinking that way. Agreed. I agree. But here's the thing, and Trump is right in saying this. Those are words. He says it was locker room banter. I don't like locker room banter. I went to CNN, or was it MSNBC, one of these lefty. And they say, oh, well, I've been in locker rooms before, the guy's saying, and I don't hear talk like that. They don't talk like that in locker rooms. That guy's a liar. I mean, when I was in eighth grade, they would say those kind of things in the locker room. You've got to be kidding. And by the way, the dirtiness of eighth grade locker room doesn't change after they go to Harvard. They just buy expensive suits. They're the same people. Don't kid yourself. We're all grown up, and you know what I'm saying is true. So, yeah, Trump is what you thought he was, right? I mean, he's been married 3 times. But we don't have this big, long track record of Clinton attacking and abusing women. Bill Clinton does. Bill Clinton has a track record, and it's a mile long, of the women he has seduced and committed adultery with and raped. When you think of what he was doing in the Oval Office with Monica Lewinsky, that vile creature, guess what? The press loves him, even after this all came out. Oh, they just so excited when Bill comes along. Oh, he's just the smartest guy in the face of the earth. They could care less that he has groped, sexually assaulted, and raped women. But when Donald Trump is having locker room man talk, and I'm not making an excuse for that, but when he's just talking dirty, they say he's unfit to be president, he should resign and not pursue this anymore, he ought to back out of the race. But they would open their arms wide to Bubba, the man who bites the lower lip of a woman to create enough pain to distract her while he pursues his attempt to rape her. Now, Trump said words. Clinton acts out on them continuously and in a way that's even more vulgar than what Trump was talking about. And everybody, I was telling the large people the other day, same thing with John Kennedy. Oh, he's so great. He's so wonderful. We're supposed to take our hats off and think of him with fondness and revere him. The guy was an adulterer. But that's okay. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He was an adulterer. No, that's okay. He was a Democrat. That's okay. Trump, forget it. So here's my point when it comes to the presidential election. Hillary, dirty, crooked, filthy. She has blood on her hands. Benghazi, look at the email scandal. Look how she scrubbed her computer after she was told to save those things. Liar, deceiver, blood on her hands. Benghazi, all this. Her husband attacking the rape victims. Donald Trump was talking bad. So we don't vote for their morals. We don't like either of their morals. But Trump wants to do right by the United States. Hillary wants to do wrong by the United States. The only choice you have is the issue. Look, I'm up against a break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.